likely to protect everybody else's sanity. It's a team of no less than 4 DSS-grade sorcerers working on a single research project for more than 30 years. They've grown more than slightly weird along the way. Just talking to them, then thinking too hard about their answers, can put you at risk of developing Kranzberg syndrome, the horrible encephalopathy that tends to afflict people who spend too much time thinking about symbolic magic. The map is one with the territory. Think too hard about the wrong theorems, and you shouldn't be surprised if extra-dimensional entities start chewing microscopic chunks out of your grey matter.
I want to see Ford's raw data, Mo says thoughtfully. Someone ought to give it a good working over, looking for artifacts.
Yeah. She puts her glass down and plants the box of chocolates on top of it.
If the acceleration is real, we've only got a few months left.
And there's the rub. What Ford has detected, so Andy told us, is an accelerating rip in the probabilistic ultrastructure of space-time. If it exists, if Dr. Ford is right, the first sign is that it will amplify the efficacy of all our thaumaturgic tools. But it'll gather pace rapidly from there. He's predicting a phase change, like a pile of plutonium that's decided to lurch from ordinary criticality, the state of a controlled nuclear reactor, to prompt criticality, a sudden unwanted outburst of power, halfway between a normal nuclear reaction and a nuclear explosion. Nobody predicted this before. We all expected Case Nightmare Green to switch on with a bang, not a weeks-long transition, an explosion rather than a meltdown. For a few days, we'll be gods, before it tears the walls of the world apart and lets the nightmares in.
Ought to make the best use of what time we've got left, she thinks aloud.
I put my glass down and roll on my side to face her.
Yes.
Come here, she says, stretching her free arm towards me.
Outside the window, the wild darkness claws at our frail bubble of light and warmth, ignored and temporarily forgotten in our primate frenzy. But its time will come. The next morning we oversleep by mutual consent, then slouch about the kitchen for a scandalously prolonged breakfast. Mo looks at me, sleepy-eyed with satisfaction, over a bare plate.
I needed that.
A guilty glance across at the empty egg carton by the frying pan on the hob.
My waistline disagrees, but my stomach says fuck it.
Enjoy it while you can. I've got plans for the weekend that include blowing a week's salary on stuff we might not need. Brown rice, lentils, canned beans, camping gas cylinders. I can make room for it in our abbreviated joke of a cellar if I toss the rusting bicycle and a bunch of other crap that's taking up space. I was thinking about going into the office this afternoon.
But you're signed off sick, Mo points out.
Yeah, that's a trouble. I refill my coffee mug from the cafetiere. After what Andy said, I figure I ought to at least poke around Angleton's office, see if I can spot something that everyone else has missed before the trail goes cold. And there are some files I want to pull, so I've got something to read over the weekend.
You are not bringing work home.
She crosses her arms, abruptly mulish. The thought never crossed my mind. I play the innocent expression card, and she raises me one sullen glare. I fold.
I'm sorry, but there's also some reading matter I want to pick up.
You're not bringing work home. We're not certified anyway.
Yes, we are. As of yesterday, this is a level 2 secure site, I point out. I'm not bringing anything secret home, just archive stuff from the stacks. It's tagged confidential, but it's so old it's nearly ready to claim its pension. Strictly historical interest only.
She raises an eyebrow.
Why?
Angleton, I swallow. When he sent me to Cosford, he forgot to give me the backgrounder first, but he gave me a reading list.
Oh, fucking hell.
She looks annoyed, which is a good sign. But then her eyes track sideways, and I realize I'm not off the hook yet.
What's that?
That? I ask brightly, suppressing the impulse to squawk, oh shit. It appears to be a cardboard box.
A cardboard box with a picture of an iPhone on it, she says slowly.
It's empty, I hurry to reassure her.
Right.
She picks up her coffee and takes a mouthful.
Would I be right in thinking it's empty because it used to contain an iPhone, which is now, oh, I don't know, in your pocket?
Yes.
Oh, Bob, don't you know any better?
It was at least a Class 4 Glamour, I say defensively, resisting the urge to hunch my shoulders and hiss, "Precious." And I needed a new phone anyway. She sighs.
Why, Bob? Has your old phone started to smell or something?
I left my PDA in Hangar 6 at Cosford, I point out. It's slightly scorched around the edges, and I don't have room for half my contacts on my mobile.
So you bought an iPhone rather than bugging Iris to sign off on a replacement PDA?
If you must put it that way. Yes. Mo rolls her eyes.
Bob loses saving throw versus shiny with a penalty of -5. Bob takes 2d8 damage to the credit card. Just how much did it cost? Will you take it back if I guilt trip you hard enough? Do pigs fly?
I was considering it, I admit, but then Brains came round and installed something.
Brains installed?
He's working on a port of offcut to the iPhone platform at work. I think he thought mine was an official phone. I've got to take it into the office and get it scrubbed before I even think about trading it in, or the auditors will string us both up by the giblets. I shudder faintly, but Mo is visibly distracted.
Hang on, they ported offcut to the iPhone. What does it look like?
I'll show you. 15 minutes later, I am on my way to the office, sans shiny. Mo is still sitting at the kitchen table with a cold mug of coffee, enthralled to the Jesus phone's reality distortion field, prodding at the jelly bean icons with an expression of hapless fascination on her face. I've got a horrible feeling that the only way I'm going to earn forgiveness is to buy her one for her birthday. Such is life in a geek household.